Good evening, and you are listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke, and each week we try to give you some tips and hints on how you can do your bit for the environment in the hopes of attempting at least to tackle climate change. I hope you've had a great week. If you're at Electric Picnic, well, I hope you enjoyed yourselves. I'm guessing you're not listening to the radio right now. You're probably fast asleep after a hectic weekend. But look, if you're still awake and conscious, well, fair play to you. I hope you had a brilliant time down in Stradbally. Well, you know, over the past number of months here on the show, we've talked a little bit about fashion and fashion's impact on the environment and its place in climate change. And depending on who you listen to, we know that the fast fashion industry is responsible for about 10% of climate change emissions, or at least to put it in another way, it's second worst to the oil companies. And we know how bad oil companies are for the environment. So to talk a little bit more about slow fashion and what exactly is happening here in Ireland, I'm joined now by Aoife Long. Aoife, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Aisling.
So, Aoife, for people who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. I am a writer based here in Ireland, and I run a magazine called Slow Fashion in Ireland. And we're focused at looking at the designers and the farmers and the researchers who are looking into producing ethical, sustainable fashion within Ireland.
Fantastic. And what got you interested in this area to begin with?
Well, I think like most people, it started out being a consumer and struggling to find truly sustainable clothing. When I was in college, I, of course, shopped where everyone else shops, in the big brand stores, and quickly realized upon looking into it that their sustainability claims really didn't hold up. I started wearing vintage clothing and exploring the wonderful vintage stores in Dublin. And, you know, a little bit later on, I started to explore designers who are alive, who are manufacturing within Ireland, and I really wanted to have clothes that were made locally.
I think people will, when they're listening to this, go, we don't manufacture all that much in Ireland nowadays in the fashion industry. Like, we think at least that that is a long gone era, and you're kind of trying to tell people that actually, no, that's not the case.
Yeah, well, I suppose manufacturing in the way most people think about it, with massive factories employing hundreds to thousands of people, that sort of industry is gone within Ireland. We are too late for that. However, what is in Ireland at the moment are small studios, independent artists who are running their own labels, essentially. And for me, that's a lot more interesting. There's a lot more of a story there. There's a human element, and they produce really unique designs. You're not going to run into anyone else on the street wearing these clothes.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There is nothing worse than, you know, putting a bit of effort in and turning up to something, whether it be work or a special occasion, and there's somebody else wearing your outfit, and you get this gut feeling that, in fact, they're wearing it better than I am. That, you know, it's, look, we've all been there, and yeah, it's not a nice feeling. So I suppose, first things first, what makes slow fashion different when it comes to climate change and the environment? Why is it better?
Why is it better? Well, I suppose the definition of slow fashion, it's the opposite of fast fashion, essentially. So the term was actually coined by a lady called Kate Fletcher, who is from the Center for Sustainable Fashion. And she actually was inspired by the term slow food. And there are a lot of similarities between food and fiber production. And my magazine focuses on the actual fiber production, talking to farmers and getting really down to the ground level, essentially. How is it better? Obviously, with local manufacturing and small studio production, there are less air miles, obviously. The clothing travels hundreds of miles at most if you're buying locally. In regards to how is it better for the environment, well, one of the big problems with fast fashion is overproduction. So it's not just the clothing that is bought that's the problem and worn once. That's a massive problem. But one of the biggest problems in fast fashion is the massive overproduction of clothing each season. And this clothing is never sold, it's never worn, it's simply burned or discarded. And this is a massive problem that obviously can be avoided with smaller production. And one of the big, points of slow fashion is to reduce consumption. In a way, it's a strange way to advertise, an industry, but we really do want to reduce consumption. We want you to look into buying clothes which represent your individuality, which really suit your own personal style, which are made of really good quality materials, made with love, and something you're going to wear for a long time. And often what's produced in Ireland is one of a kind, so you don't have to worry about overproduction.
And I know we've seen, and I think the Guardian newspaper in particular is very good at highlighting this particular issue, but we see these images of waste clothing mountains, like we had when we had quotas in the dairy industry, milk mountains and butter mountains of food that couldn't be sold. And like, it is horrific to think that all of these items, you know, they're plastic based, you know, in a lot of cases, these pieces of clothing are just sitting there and clogging up waterways and doing so much harm.
Yeah, those kind of clothing mountains you're referring to, a lot of those photos actually came from Ghana. So this is one of the destinations for supposedly recycled textiles from the Western world. Recycling textiles is an issue in itself. But when you, for example, donate clothes or attempt to recycle clothes, often they're simply exported to, you know, other economies in which there is no use for them. They do not, you know, degrade. They're often oil-based, and you know, a lot of these polymers that, you know, are used in modern clothing have not been around for a long time. But, you know, people conducting research takes anywhere from 40 years upwards to degrade. So obviously this is a massive problem. And as consumers, we need to reduce it, our consumption, at whatever level we can to prevent the environmental damage that is going on.
Okay, so we've talked about the problem. We've outlined what exactly it is. So who's active in this area in Ireland? Who should we be looking up when we're next in need of a clothes shop?
Yeah, okay. That's a really good question. And that's one of the reasons why I started the magazine, because unlike fast fashion, which is incredibly easy to find, go into any store, any town, any city in the country, slow fashion has a bit of a problem in that there is no umbrella stores and there's really no publications to find these people. My first issue, which was published on August 15th and which sold out in 10 days, profiled three young designers who are based in Ireland. The first was Anna Buzan, who is into modern tailoring. The second one is Conor O'Brien, who produces these beautiful hand-knit sweaters in Dublin. And the third is Leisha Carey, who's based here in Tipperary. And those would be a really good introduction to the world of slow fashion. Obviously, this magazine is going to be monthly, and we are going to profile, you know, five or six people each month. There are a lot of people in Ireland, and I couldn't possibly give you a substantial enough list, a complete enough list in the course of this interview. But I'd really suggest that people take the challenge and research for yourself, find a style that you like, find a designer that you like, and go meet them, go talk to them, and support them.
Now, what you're saying, that all sounds fantastic in theory, okay? But I know full well, like, there'll be people sitting at home listening to this, and like, we've got an inflation crisis, we're all worried about keeping our homes warm this winter. You know, the cost of everything has skyrocketed, and clothing is a necessary luxury, but we don't necessarily always have an awful lot of money to spend on it. And I think the fear a lot of people have with supporting Irish designers, they kind of have a tendency to even avoid going into the shop or near them because they're afraid to embarrass themselves, that they won't be able to afford it. Like, is there a slow fashion that is affordable?
Yeah, well, I think there are several ways to look at this. And of course, we're always conscious of the environment, the economic environment that we're in. We're living it too. We're not insulated from it in any way. It's definitely part of a bigger issue. If you are worried about budget initially, please take a look at vintage clothing stores, secondhand clothing stores. It's a wonderful way to reduce the environmental impact and to pick up some really unique pieces if you know what you're looking for. There are some real gems floating around the place in vintage stores in Ireland. I actually interviewed a girl who runs a vintage store down in Ennistymon, Alfie's in Ennistymon. So please go check into those kind of places. I do understand and I hear your concern about the cost of Irish-made design, but we need to start looking at the cost of clothing in terms of the environmental cost, but also in terms of the cost per wear. You know, if you buy a piece of fast fashion, it's a €5 t-shirt, it falls apart after one wash. That's not very efficient. If you, for instance, invest into a piece of Irish-made clothing and you wear it for, you know, 5 to 10 years and it becomes part of your wardrobe, that reduces the cost per wear. Really, clothing needs to be an investment and we need to get away from this mindset of single-use fashion.
Now, I remember many years ago having a conversation with an older lady in Waterford that I was interviewing at the time for a project. And after the interview, which was about GAA at the time, and her family's involvement, we got chatting about fashion and she was really interested in it. And she used to do a little bit of, she was a seamstress, but kind of a little bit of that. And she told me, and it just stuck in my head, that when she was younger, she would have women coming to her and men on a regular basis, this time of the year, every autumn, they'd be looking to get ready for the winter. And they'd have a coat that they'd had for years and they'd ask her to rip the seams and turn the coat inside out. Because the original outside of it had its day, but this was a way of repurposing the item and giving it a second life instead of getting rid of it, because it was cheaper, it was financially easier to do that than it was to go and get the money to buy something new. And it strikes me that these are the kind of skills we need now, but I don't know that we have them in great amounts.
That is true, but I think there's a great willingness to learn how to mend and how to make your own clothes. I mean, if you're interested, it is time consuming, but it's very rewarding as well. If you do not have the time, there are local seamstresses and people, you know, available who will be happy to help you extend the life of your clothes. But I think one of the points of people rewearing and mending clothes in the last 50 years or so, the clothes they were mending were of really good quality. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the clothes you have now, which are, you know, manufactured with, let's say, less rigorous standards, you know, they may not be worth mending. And that is sadly the reality of fast fashion, you know.
But it is worth having a look at your own wardrobe and see, could something be reinvigorated? Like, I have a coat that my mother bought me. Now, it's a Spanish label, not an Irish label, but my mum bought it for me to congratulate me on getting my first full-time gig in Midlands 103, as it was at the time, in 2010. And that's how I remember that was when it was bought. It was for that winter. That coat this winter will be brought out. And it has been to the alterations lady in Tullamore on several occasions and has been freshened up, let's say, over the years. And it's still perfectly good. So, and like, I know that coat cost a couple of €100 at the time, which was a massive amount of money. But, we're in 2022 and I know I'm still going to be wearing it. So I think it is about, and I'm not saying I'm perfect, it's just that I happened to like it and hold on to it, basically. And that's what it comes down to. But maybe we need to start thinking more in that way and shopping our own wardrobes instead of going to the shop first.
Yeah, I think a lot of I think slow fashion, it's an invitation to sort of pre-planning and researching the kind of pieces you'd like to wear, really reducing, sort of impulse purchases. I think that's a big deal. And I love the story about the coat. That's part of the reason I became so interested in slow fashion, is because clothing is really important to us. You know, clothing holds energy, it holds a lot of memories, and it has a lot of sentimental value to people. You know, you look at something in your wardrobe and you really can relive what you experienced while wearing it, you know?
Yeah, and like, I know I have, like, my grandmother was a wonderful woman for fashion. She loved the Glynn ladies in Moat, loved their style, and still do, in fact. And she had these beautiful headscarves. And so when she passed away, and, you know, my aunts and uncles were going through the few bits, you know, I was able to keep some of those. Now, my grandmother was a quarter of the size that I am, so I might not ever, like, fit into one of these, you know. We might have a different circumference. But, you know, I still hold on to it because of the sentimental value. And I'm sure many people have items of clothing that they hold on to for those reasons. And I wonder, you know, if we look at things that we're buying, well, okay, once I'm finished with it, you know, I'm buying it for the Christmas party, say, for instance. And I know I'm not on broadcasting supposed to mention the C word in September, but hey, I've done it now. There will be, okay, we hope we will be able to socialise in it as normal as we can this coming season. And like, what would your advice, if you know that there's going to be an office occasion coming up, you know, what should our first port of call be instead of going to the high street?
Well, let's start with what we've been talking about. Let's look at our own wardrobes, see what, you know, could be altered or upcycled is another term where people, you know, make adjustments or embellish existing clothing that they already have. And I'd say, you know, start looking for Irish designers. Maybe something's caught your eye that you saw in a newspaper or a magazine, and, you know, start exploring for pieces which will represent your values. You know, are they manufactured ethically? Do they use a sustainable fiber? And do they suit you? I think that's the biggest thing.
And Aoife, then, what do you say to people who might be listening? And I'm sure all of our listeners are environmentally conscious, but for argument's sake, say there's somebody listening to us that thinks this is a whole load of rubbish. And I don't have €100 to spend on a T-shirt. It'll be the €5 from that well-known retailer. You know, what would you say to them who just think this conversation is just not for them?
Well, honestly, if this conversation is not for you, it's not for you. We honestly, as makers and as designers, we are busy making and designing, and we're delighted to explain what we do and how we do it, and we're delighted to show you the value in what is made in Ireland. But if you're not ready to listen and you're not ready to hear it, we wish you well. We would advise you to be sustainable in whatever ways you can. Go to vintage stores. You know, mend, make whatever you can. But, you know, we would hope at a certain point you would give some time to Irish designers, listen to what they have to say, and see the value of what's made in your own country.
Well, Aoife Long, thank you very much for joining us on Let's Go Green here today. And if you're listening and you are a seamstress or an alterations person or even a cobbler, please feel free to get in contact with us for some tips and tricks on how we can get more life out of our clothing. Aoife, it's been a pleasure chatting with you this evening.
Thank you, Aisling.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Aoife Long there just before the break. Now, we're turning to, I'm going to say, a somewhat controversial topic tonight, and that is hedge cutting and birds. And those two phrases really shouldn't be controversial, but they do tend to get people's heckles up. And I thought, you know what, it is the time of year that many of us, myself included, are going to be looking at tidying up our hedges and gardens ahead of the winter season, because, you know, it's just easier to do it at this time of year than, you know, later when it's Baltic outside. So to talk about this now and why we should be careful when we're going about these jobs this autumn, we're joined by Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland. Niall, you're very welcome back to the programme.
Thank you so much for having me back on. I really appreciate it.
Now, Niall, it always amazes me. Now, maybe it's because the fact that, you know, my parents come from a farming background, so I've been raised with, I suppose, a little bit of knowledge here, but that there are certain times, and not everybody knows, that there are certain times of years of the year when you can cut your hedges and when you can't, and that's because of the wildlife that call the hedges their home. So talk me through the rules around it first off. Let's start with the basics.
So the basics are governed by a piece of legislation called the Wildlife Act, and that's been enforced since 1976. And it in turn is put in place in Irish law because of a legal ruling called, or early regulation called, the Birds Directive from the European Union. And in Ireland, what that does is it makes it prohibited to cut hedges between the 1st of March and the 31st of August. So it's squarely outside that prohibited period now. Now, it is worth pointing out that there are a variety of exemptions from those dates where hedge cutting is permitted. One of the most notable being for reasons of road safety, which is obviously right and proper, and nobody would object to that at all.
Yeah, exactly. So if, say, a farmer had a hedge that just really took off during the summer, and he or she could see it was going to cause an issue and maybe blocking of a view on the road for the motorists, the safest thing to do is, even if you might disturb the wildlife, is to cut it back, because you do not want to be responsible for causing a crash.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. And under the Roads Act, it actually would be incumbent on the landowner to do that, actually. They have to maintain the safety. So no, absolutely.
So okay,
that would be completely understandable.
So from the 1st of March to the 31st of August,
that's correct.
We can't go near them unless we fall into one of these exemptions, like a road safety issue.
Yes, that's right. There are various exemptions laid down by law, and there's certain exemptions for local authorities in certain circumstances and so on as well. So it's not so cut and dried or black and white as it would be. But as a basic rule, from the 1st of March to the 31st of August, that's what the law says.
Niall? Why do we have these restrictions in place?
Well, it particularly to benefit and to protect nesting birds. And that's the period when birds will be nesting in our hedgerows. Their courtship starts in sort of the mid to late spring. Some will be nest building already at that stage. You know, it might be a few weeks before they lay eggs. And then many species are nesting right throughout the summer months. It depends a little on the weather, of course, and how much food is available. But many species will continue right through into August. And therefore, the law is in place. It's an obligation under EU membership, in fact, so that those birds will be protected and they get a good chance for the chicks to get away. So it makes sense from that point of view, even if it wasn't a law, that people should try their best to make sure that those birds are protected, because we're seeing so many declines, especially among our farmland birds at the moment, that every little benefit they can get from being able to nest in hedgerows and being protected and have sources of food and so on, it makes a big, big difference for them.
And just, you know, plain devil's advocate here, like, why does it matter? Like, what does it matter if we disturb a nesting bird? Like, in environmental terms, like, why should we care?
Well, that's a very good question. And the fact of it is that we in Birdwatch Ireland, we're obviously the bird protection charity within Ireland. We don't protect birds and monitor birds just for their own sake, although they're very worthwhile of that in their own right. It's because birds are indicators of the health of our environment. So we see changes in bird populations. We see them disappearing. We know that there are similar pressures coming on to other creatures as well, such as pollinating insects. We see food chains going out of kilter. So I think from that point of view, birds themselves are very well worth studying and worth protecting. That is important. We also have to realise as well the amount of hedgerows we have in Ireland. They sort of take the place of woodland, really, in much of the country. We have the lowest levels of tree cover in all of Europe. I think a lot of people in Ireland are surprised by that, but a lot of visitors, when they come to Ireland, they say, well, Ireland's very nice and everything, but why do you guys not have any trees? And when you travel widely in other European countries, you realise it is true. We have vast open spaces of grass and big fields, but very little by way of woodland in Ireland, literally among the lowest levels of forest cover in all of Europe. Now, our hedgerows, they compensate for that to some degree. They form these linear woodlands along our roads, through our field networks and systems. And this is space where birds can nest and can shelter, and also use as conduits to get from A to B. But it's also a wonderful source of shelter and food for all sorts of mammals and insects and many other creatures as well. So the hedgerows themselves are very important. But birds really feeling a lot of pressure at the moment, they're, especially on farmlands, they're being hit by climate change, they're being hit by pollution, they're being hit by intensification in agriculture, they're being hit by all sorts of problems like that. And climate change for our migrants is a particularly bad one. So the added problem of having hedges cut right when the birds are nesting, it can be a serious issue for a lot of them. And it's not necessarily the case that the flail or the blade will actually cut through their nest. And everyone can see that'd be a bad thing for those birds that would destroy the eggs or chicks inside. It can also make the nest, even if it survives, it can make the nest much more visible to predators. All of a sudden, that nest that was in the middle of the hedge is now right in the very edge. So it's very obvious to any predator around, like a squirrel or a fox or a rat or whatever it may be, that nest is right there. So it's much more easy to access it, and the defence and protection that hedge would provide is gone. Also, what it does too is it sort of pulls the rug out from underneath the parent birds midway through the nesting season, because when they were choosing a spot to nest, they were thinking ahead or planning ahead as to what that hedgerow would provide in terms of food as their chicks were growing and they first left the nest. And then, of course, when the hedge is cut and all the insect larvae are destroyed, the berries disappear, that pulls the rug right out from underneath them. So that can make life harder for them as well. So that's why the hedges, I believe, deserve protection, and that's why the law is in place. And I think it's important to realise that these birds are fully protected under national and EU law. I think we have also a moral obligation to protect them, especially given that we've caused so much destruction for so much mm-hmm. of our biodiversity. A functioning ecosystem, functioning biodiversity, it's of enormous economic benefit and of health and wellbeing benefit for people. It really is invaluable. But it's also of great monetary value too. We rely on pollination services to save billions of euros per year. We rely on birds as part of pest control, and they brighten our lives as well. So I think there's many reasons we should preserve and save our birds.
Now, I know birds are your thing, Niall, but we shouldn't forget, like, hedgerows and hedges even in our gardens are home to hedgehogs and other wildlife that are also very, very important to our ecosystem. Niall, you know, we say the rule is the 1st of March to the 31st of August, and I know some years the dates will change depending on, you know, what's going on, that the government might adjust that's within their purview. But I'm assuming here, and this might sound like an absolutely ludicrous question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Birds don't necessarily have a calendar, and they don't necessarily know that, well, last Wednesday, that was the 31st of August 2022. So, you know, what do we need to do before we actually go out with the chainsaw to start tackling the overgrown hedge? You know, do we need to do a quick check to make sure that the birds have actually left the nests and all of that first?
Yes, and that's a very good point, because you're right. The birds don't know what laws we set. They don't know those dates specifically. And there will be the case, of course, that some birds may well be nesting into September. There's a species particularly called the yellowhammer, which is a lovely bright yellow sparrow-like bird, really declining in a lot of Ireland. And they can be nesting into September, along with some other species. And quite apart from those hedge-cutting dates, it is actually a criminal offence for anybody to destroy a bird's nest or to disturb it. So that's quite separate from hedge cutting. So at any time of year, that's the law. Though most birds' nests aren't going to be active outside of much of that season. So I definitely would recommend, yes, people would check quickly to make sure that there are no birds left nesting in the hedges. And obviously, if those hedges happen to be full, you know, buzzing with insects at the moment, or full of berries that are there, to delay the hedge cutting as long as you can. There's no law compelling you to do that, but if it's possible to delay it for a few weeks, as long as you can, so that the birds and the other wildlife can get the maximum benefit from those insects, from those flowers, from those berries, then that would be a great benefit. Again, it's not the law that you have to do that, but it's certainly, if the option is there, it would be a great benefit to wildlife. But please do check, certainly at least, that there are no birds actually nesting in the hedge at that time before cutting starts.
It's the age-old adage, just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should.
Yes, absolutely. And I think as well, especially when it comes to our gardens, I think perhaps we may need to reassess, I suppose, what makes for a pleasant garden. Everyone, it's obviously an aesthetic thing, but sometimes I think that gardening particularly can be seen as a battle against nature and, you know, and trying to get into shape and have it all neatly manicured. Whereas in fact, to my sensibility, having a garden that's full of wildlife it trumps that for sure. So I think that perhaps when it comes to our gardens and our parks and our green spaces and so on, I think that perhaps, you know, having it perhaps less well manicured, but having more wildflowers, having more natural kind of hedges, more trees and so on around, that will protect these birds. It could be a little bit more untidy perhaps in the older way of thinking about it, but actually much more natural, because I think that at the end of the day, trying to replicate as much of those natural ecosystems as we can is ultimately going to benefit wildlife the most. And it just requires a bit of a change in mindset and view, I suppose, as to what we consider beautiful or aesthetically pleasing.
In my own garden at home, in my family home, I don't think I can fit any more trees in. I keep adding to it, but to do my bit for the environment. But I know as well, like, we shouldn't forget that for older trees particularly and hedgerows, it is good for them in themselves to get a trim or a haircut, as someone in my house calls it, every couple of years, just to keep them healthy as well. It's not necessarily an entirely negative thing if you do it responsibly.
Oh, completely right. Absolutely. In fact, it's a very positive thing to encourage regrowth and to keep them healthy and vibrant. So absolutely, you know, hedge cutting is a vital part of hedgerow management without question. So it definitely needs to happen. I think that, you know, in some cases it can happen maybe less often than maybe once a year. In some cases that's where it's happening. It can maybe be once every 3 years. The timing can be done at such a time of year that it's having the minimum impact on wildlife. But no, absolutely. cutting of hedges and a bit of vegetation and pruning of trees is absolutely essential. So I wouldn't for a moment want to be thought that we're against, in Bertrand, we're against the cutting of hedges. Far from it. It's an essential part of the maintenance for them to make sure that they're vibrant and actually the most benefit to wildlife. It really comes down to the time of year when it's done and lessening the impact on the wildlife actually using them at that time.
And I think as well, for instance, I wouldn't, hedge cutting is a job that I would not tackle. I don't know how to use a chainsaw. I don't think I'd have the physical strength to do it. So we have someone that comes in to do it for us and to do it safely, because I know how dangerous using a chainsaw in particular incorrectly could potentially be. And we should say that it is one of those jobs that you probably should get somebody who's qualified to do it and to do it safely. And perhaps when you get these contractors in, sorry, I'm hesitating there because I'm trying not to assume that it will be a man, although oftentimes it is. But when you're getting this person in, to say to them that, okay, I accept that this has to be done for the health of the tree, but I also want to be environmentally responsible. So I don't necessarily want this to be cut right back or to be manicured in the traditional sense.
Well, yes, I think that's very important. Of course, as the customer or the client, you're the person who dictates what job should be done. So I think that's important. I think it's important to let the contractors who are working for you to know that you want to maximise biodiversity, that you want to make sure that they check for nesting birds within the hedge. I'm sure that many of them do already, the vast majority, hopefully, but it doesn't hurt to check. At least then everyone knows that they need to be mindful of this and that maximum has been done to protect nature and to protect wildlife. So please, yeah, do ask those questions of the people you contract to do the hedge for you. As you said, it is indeed, in most cases, a very big job. It's often best left to the professionals. And many of those professionals will be well-versed in how to protect birds, how to watch out for signs of nesting and so on. And obviously the bottom line as well is just to go reiterate those dates. From the 1st of March to the 31st of August, hedge cutting shouldn't happen except for the exemptions applies, as in the case, quite rightly, of road safety, for example.
Now, Niall, once the hedge is cut, okay, and you've got all of these branches and twigs and leaves, is there, like, the traditional thing, I think, realistically, is that it all goes out to the dump, wherever or whatever we could now call. I think it's now a recycling depot is what we're supposed to be calling it. But I was brought up with it being referred to as the dump. So is there a more environmentally sustainable, something better that we can be doing with those branches and twigs instead of just dumping them all in the back of a trailer and heading out the road to the dump?
Well, yes, and obviously it depends on the amount of space available and what other use is needed in the land. But the fact is, that's really important. Biomass, it's all biological material, and decomposing, decaying wood, these kind of cuttings and so on, can be a great haven for all sorts of insects, particularly insect larvae will live in them. They themselves as well are sort of left to sort of tangle and piles. They can actually be good hibernating areas for the likes of hedgehogs, for example, and they can also be good areas themselves for birds to forage in and so on. So if it's possible to use them as wildlife habitats in their own right, that can actually be a very good thing to do. However, I do recognise, of course, in most agricultural settings, nobody wants a big pile of twigs and branches in the middle of a field. I understand that that's not going to work in many cases, but it is possible to put them in wild areas to sort of recreate a sort of semi-wild or semi-natural habitat in which you would have quite a lot of dead and decaying wood materials. So dead trees and dead wood is something we're actually lacking a lot in Ireland as well, because any tree when it's showing any signs of disease or decay is usually cut down for safety reasons, and in many cases, of course, that's perfectly justified. But it does mean that we have become unused to the sight of dead wood in Ireland, and actually that's a really important habitat for so many creatures, particularly for lots of beetles and other insects as well, which in turn become food for birds. It's all about trying to replicate that natural ecosystem. And when you go into sort of a good primeval forest, of the few that are left in Europe, there's one for one in eastern Poland, for example, and this wonderful ancient forest. You go in there, maybe a third of the trees are dead and decaying and decomposing over hundreds of years, and you get woodpeckers feeding on them, you get lots of birds nesting in the holes. They're absolutely alive with fungi, all of these things. And with hedge cutting, even though it's not the same thing really, you can sort of replicate at least some of that in a farm setting or even in a garden setting if you have the space to do so.
And you could, if it's a small garden, you could take a wee corner and create a little haven for hedgehogs dogs or, you know, a natural bug hotel. Like, I know I was talking about this with David Fanan from KMK Metals in Kilbeggan last week, and how, you know, we see in shops and different stalls at markets selling these commercial bug hotels, but you could just make one of your own. And if you have young people in the house, you know, they'll get great crack out of watching it, seeing if it's being used. Maybe you might get a hedgehog in it if you're lucky. You know, that we could be more creative. And then, okay, we can't keep it all. Put a third of it in a little hedge hotel in a corner of the garden. Okay, and then dispose of the rest. But we can make use of some of it.
Well, absolutely. And I think that it's a very rewarding and satisfying thing to do. And if you succeed and you start to see more insects coming in, or if you're lucky enough to get a hedgehog coming in, it feels absolutely wonderful. And for children particularly, or for adults too, mm-hmm. it's a great way to sort of learn about that connection between our actions and nature. And it really, really does feel good to get back in that way and to track them. It's great to learn more about these creatures up close and personal as well. So in Ireland, we have about 1.5 million private gardens across the country. So if every single garden owner was to take one simple step of having a little corner for wildlife, food for the birds or a nest box up, if everyone was to do that across those 1.5 million gardens, it would actually make an enormous difference for wildlife. And I think that's really important to remember as well. Sometimes we think we hear so much about the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis. It can all seem very, very hopeless and very insurmountable. But the fact is, we do all have the power to do things in our own homes and also with the consumer choices that we make, that each of us can genuinely make a difference. And when you start attracting in animals like hedgehogs and you start to have in pollinating insects like bees around the garden, you really do, in a very tangible way, see that you are having a benefit. This is for the greater good, and it's a really nice feeling. And as always as well, for families in particular and people with young children around, that connection with nature, that getting up close and personal with these wild creatures, these wild plants and animals, I think it's an invaluable thing that I'd wish more people could experience. It's given me a lot of my life, I have to say, and I hope that more people can find the benefits of that too.
Well, Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland, thank you, as always, for having a chat with me on this evening's episode of Let's Go Green. And of course, Niall, if we want to learn more about the work that you do, we can look up Birdwatch Ireland on your own website and your social media pages.
Yes, absolutely. The website's birdwatchireland.ie. You'll find it there. And we're always looking for any information and questions people may have there to help. So thank you very much for having me on this evening. It's been really nice talking to you.
Thanks very much, Niall. We'll be back with some music after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Now, I know it's probably been for many of you a bit of a stressful weekend if you had a Leaving Cert student in your family, in your household, in your close network. And God, my heart goes out to them. It really does. It's the one thing in my life that you genuinely could not pay me to go back and go through the stress of the exams, the stress of waiting for the results. And then again, now this week, waiting again for the CAO offers. So I just wanted to give them a shout out. It's a really tough time. It's not easy. And it's, in my personal opinion, cruel. But look, that's the system the way it is. And I have absolutely no power to change it. But I just wanted to mention, a fortnight ago, we had guidance counsellor Betty McLaughlin on the show talking about the different courses and options that you have in terms of studying anything that might be connected to the environment. So say if you're interested in building, turns out now as part of construction studies, you do a module around the environment and the impact construction has on the environment. And that, and all of those, there's actually so many options. So if you have somebody in your life who's unsure of what they want to do, but they're actually really interested in doing their bit for the environment and taking a role, I guess, in tackling climate change, that it's worth having a listen back to that episode. And that was the episode, not last Monday, the Monday before. So that would have been the 22nd of August. And you will find that on midlands103.com under Let's Go Green. You can also look up Let's Go Green on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and indeed Google Podcasts. From my own perspective, don't forget that if you didn't get the points you wanted, if you don't think you're going to get the course that you want to do this year, colleges of further education are still offering places and conducting interviews. In many of the colleges of further education, the classes don't start until the end of September, start of October. I know that's the case in the college that I teach in. We're conducting interviews still. We still have limited places available. But it is worth considering, because in many of those colleges, you get the exact same qualification as you would do if you went on to a university. It's just a different, perhaps more practical approach to teaching and learning. but it might be something you want to consider. So just no harm, given the week that we're in, I thought to remind everyone of that. So in a bid to cheer up any particularly stressed out listeners when it comes to this particular time of year, why not play a local lady tonight? And you know how much I enjoy supporting Irish artists, and even better when they're local artists. But here's The Light, and it's from Tulu Mekay and Malachi. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I'm afraid that's all we have time for on this week's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed our conversations this evening, and perhaps I hope we've given you some ideas. If you'd like to listen back to this episode of Let's Go Green, or indeed any episode of the show, don't forget you can do so through your preferred podcast platform, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or even Google Podcasts. You can find the direct links to each of those through Let's Go Green on Midlands103.com. My thanks to Dr. Aoife Long of Along Ireland. Her Slow Fashion magazine comes out at the start of each and every month, and she promotes herself and her work and the magazine through her Instagram page. You can find that on a.longireland. And my thanks to Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland. You can find out all about the work of Birdwatch Ireland through their website and associated social media accounts. I'm going to leave you now and hand over to the main man, Mr. Cooney. But for now, have a great week, stay safe, and we'll be back same time next week here with another edition of Let's Go Green.